We're going to teach you how to breathe in just a moment. James Nestor with us, and we'll take your calls as well when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. James Nestor with us, of course, and we're going to take your calls this hour. James, before we get to calls, tell us a little bit about these techniques.
Well, the techniques range from thousands of years old to pretty recent. Some are used by Navy SEALs. Others have been used by different religious organizations. But the great thing is everyone breathes, so we can all take advantage of these, and we can really alter our states of consciousness if you want to do that. But you can also calm yourself down and help reduce inflammation and make yourself feel a lot better.
Now, what do you recommend for people in terms of techniques for breathing?
Everybody is different. You know, you'd recommend something entirely different for an asthmatic as you would for an ultra marathoner. It depends what people are looking for. If they're trying to ameliorate some of the symptoms of chronic respiratory problems, or if they're trying to go up that next level of human potential, it really depends.
Is there a science behind this? I mean, do medical doctors, pulmonary specialists get involved in this?
That's what I spent the last several years doing, is working with the chief of rhinology research at Stanford, interviewing various researchers at Harvard. And, you know, to me, it wasn't very important that these things just affected me, that they made me feel different or they did this or that for me. It has to work for everyone. And to do that, you have to measure it. And if you're going to measure it, that has to be done objectively. So if you go on to the National Institute of Health website, there's something like 40,000 studies right now looking into breathing. So this is going to be a huge area of inquiry. It already has been for the past few decades, and I see that only really building in the future now.
Is it easy or is it difficult when you're awake to breathe just through your nose consciously?
It depends. It depends if you have a deviated septum. It depends if you have chronic rhinitis. It depends on so many different things. But the good thing is about all of these methods is they're free, they're easy, they're accessible to anyone, anywhere. You just need the power of will to do them. And the science is very clear that they can make a significant impact on your health and well-being.
How soon does that kick in, the change that you begin to see?
It depends on what you really want. You know, some people with COPD or asthma, that will probably take a couple weeks or a couple of months.
Okay.
For other people who are stressed out or about to have a panic attack, it can happen in a matter of seconds. You know, it happens very quickly. And I'll show you this when we start doing some of these breathing techniques. You can instantly feel these things changing you. And if you don't believe yourself, you don't believe your brain, you think it's some placebo effect, get a heart rate variability monitor, get a blood pressure cuff, put that on, and test yourself before and after changing your breathing. This isn't some woo-woo placebo effect thing. This is the most basic function of our biology. You're just honing it and focusing it and learning how to do it better.
Some people get rapid heartbeats, and I've been told by doctors that if you do slow, deep breaths, it probably will go away.
It can definitely help. I am not a doctor. I am not a breathing therapist. I'm a journalist who spent years and years talking to some of the leading experts in this field. So I'm not here to offer blanket prescriptions for anyone. I can just filter what has worked, what I've heard has worked, and what I've seen has worked in various lab experiments, and offer that to people. So that can certainly work for some people. We know that slower breathing is very effective for panic. It's very effective for asthma, and it's very effective for so many other things.
How many different breathing techniques are there out there, James?
There's hundreds. There's probably thousands. Which is why this was so frustrating for me when I first started really researching this years and years ago. You can look at these books on yoga and pranayama, and there's 100 different breathing techniques in each chapter. They all have these crazy names. They're extremely complicated. And so I kept thinking, it's like, where do you start, right? Do you start at the back of the book, at the front of the book, whatever? So the way I constructed my book and the way I tried to think about it is, what is the foundation of breathing that everyone can benefit from? Whether you have chronic sinusitis, or whether you're a rower or a cyclist or just a regular office jockey, what are those things that we can all focus on and improve our health with? So that's what the middle of the book is. And then towards the end of it is when you get into that, how can you heat your body up? How can you heal your body? Where else can breathing take us in realms of consciousness and the rest?
What happens if you take 5 minutes a day and just concentrate in your room on these breathing techniques? 5 minutes a day, what does that help you?
It really depends on who you are and how you're breathing that way. We do know that just 30 breaths a day of some techniques have been shown to lower blood pressure by about 12 points.
That's huge.
30 breaths a day. That's less than 5 minutes. Again, the interesting thing about breathing and looking at the science of breathing is it's very easy to measure. You don't have to guess and say, was that just my mind playing tricks on me? You can measure it. And when you measure it, you can study it. And if you can study it, then you can really build a foundation of health for people that everyone can use.
What is one of your favorite techniques, Jim?
It's so simple that a lot of people are going to poo-poo this technique and think, oh, it's not going to do anything for me, until you look at the science. So this was a technique I read about from a study that was conducted 20 years ago by some Italian researchers. Is they took a bunch of subjects and they had them recite the Ave Maria, the Catholic prayer cycle of the rosary, and then they had them recite the famous Buddhist mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. And they noticed that when you're reciting these, you are breathing at the exact same rate, which is about 5.5 breaths per minute.
Huh.
And what they found when they studied these people is that when you breathe this way, that's about 5 to 6 seconds in, 5 to 6 seconds out, which is about 5 to 6 breaths per minute. Your heart rate lowers, your blood pressure lowers, more oxygen is delivered to the brain, and if the systems of your body enter something called a state of coherence, where everything's working at peak efficiency, which is why this is called coherent breathing. Not only did the Catholics and Buddhists share this, but the Kundalini yogis, Satanama, Om, they found dozens of different prayers were locked into this respiratory cycle, this respiratory rate, because they didn't have stopwatches back then, you know, but they had prayer. And they hypothesized that this was possibly one of the reasons why prayers were conducted like this. Prayer really heals. That's what the researchers said.
It does.
It absolutely. And it's, they believed it was tied to this rhythm, this slow, deep, light breathing.
Heck, I do 5 to 6 breaths in about a minute. Now, that's pretty quick, isn't it?
That's great. No, you want to do about 5 to 6 breaths per minute. So about 5 seconds in, 2, 3, 4, 5. Exhale, 2, 3, 4, 5. In, 2, 3. And it's just this, it's so simple. And yet, how often do people breathe like this? Never. And this is how we are designed to breathe. And we know this because we can see what happens when we breathe this way on various instruments. And our bodies are so happy when we breathe this way.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Terry, first-time caller in one of our favorite cities, Indianapolis. Hey, Terry, go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. How you gentlemen doing tonight?
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Hey, I had a question for you, and I have a little story I wanted to tell you.
Okay.
About 20 years ago, they put me in a wheelchair, told me I wasn't able to walk no more. I'd gotten cut in half. I lost the rear lobe, right lobe of the liver, gallbladder, appendix, stomach.
Oh, my God.
Today, I walk. I have no pain. I don't take any pain medicine. I'm not in a wheelchair no longer. And I did that because of a lady that was 98 years old, told me a way of breathing. And she said, you can control all your pain without any medications. And you know what? It's done it.
She was right. She was right. My gosh. Well, now, how did she tell you, Terry? I mean, how do you do that?
I went through all the therapy that they could put me through that my work would pay for. And then I went ahead and I paid for separate therapy at a different therapy hospital.
Okay.
I met with this lady. She was 98 years old. And she's still, and this has been 20 years ago, and this lady is still around today.
How old is she now?
She'd have to be about 120.
You're kidding me.
And she's still around. And you know what? She's outlived her own children. She's outlived her husband. She's outlived everybody in her life.
That's an interesting thing. That's something I don't want to outlive my kids, James, but if she's 120, she's got to be one of the highest living humans out there.
Yeah, I've heard so many of these stories. And
great story.
Your story, Terry, sounds very similar to this lady in Germany who was born in around 1915, who was born with scoliosis. And she was told that she was going to spend her whole life in a wheelchair. And she developed a way of breathing called orthopedic breathing, where she straightened her spine. And all of this is recorded in x-rays. And she taught hundreds of other people to do this as well. And yet this seems to just be completely forgotten right now, even though it was proven, it was medically, scientifically proven to exist and be real. And so I hope that that's changing right now. But amazing story, Terry.
That's a great story. Terry, thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. Tom in La Jolla, California. Hello, Thomas. Breathe Hi. Well.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call. And that was a great phone call.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. I wanted to say, James, a comment and then a question. You mentioned nutrition in the beginning of your interview and how it's transformed people's physiology. There was a dentist and oral surgeon named Weston Price. Weston Price, he wrote a book called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. What he did was he traveled around the world and visited Native cultures, and he took a camera with him. And what he did was he took pictures of these Native cultures. He took pictures of their mouths because, as a dentist, he noticed that these Native cultures had very different skull shapes than civilized humanity. And he noticed that their skulls were very round. Their noses were very wide and flat. The insides of their mouths, they had perfectly formed teeth, evenly spaced, no cavities. That was the big thing that he picked up on. And he finally realized that all of these Native cultures around the world that he was photographing their mouths, they ate unprocessed foods. And so he began researching this, and particularly tribes that started eating processed foods and industrialized foods, as you called it. And he noticed that the succeeding subsequent generations, the physiology would change. The skulls would become pinched and narrow instead of round. And if you looked inside of people's mouths, the spacing of the teeth was crooked. And, you know, people had cavities. Interesting. Also, what he noticed was that when the skull becomes pinched, then it starts promoting improper breathing, as you have talked
mm-hmm.
about it.
Now you sound like Doc Wallach, Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing.
And so, you know, he studied this, and he published his results in the first half of the 20th century, over 100 years ago. And it was, you know, he realized that when you had physiological changes in the skull because of improper industrialized diet, that then it promoted bad breathing. Also, it promoted things like chain smoking. What do people try to do when they're smoking? They're trying to breathe. You see what I mean? They take a deep breath, you know, and deep inhale off of that cigarette. But really, they are trying to breathe. And his current student of Weston Price passed away, is Sally Fallon. And George Norrie, Sally Fallon would be a great person to interview
okay.
on diet. She wrote a book called Nourishing Traditions. But so back to skull size and pinched skulls because of industrial diet, and it facilitates improper breathing. It facilitates bad breathing through the mouth rather than through the nose because the skull is pinched. And if I may point out one other thing, most people, if you touch your tongue to the roof of your mouth, you will find a ridge from front to back. That's unnatural. In older cultures that ate pre-industrialized foods, unprocessed foods, their skulls would be very round, and that ridge was not there. You see what I mean?
I got some good news for you, Tom. I spent about half of a chapter in the book talking about Weston Price. The book was released in 1939, and he took 15,000 print photographs of all of these people from 12 different cultures all around the world. So he was right about so much, but he had a few blind spots, and that's what I'm filling in. Specifically, he was only looking at nutrition and vitamins and minerals, but there's another thing that led to this degeneration of our faces. It's the lack of chewing. Without chewing, we don't get that stress we need to grow the proper jaw, to grow the proper face, to have straight teeth. So Price's work is incredible, and I would recommend anyone go check it out online and just look at the pictures, and it's all right there.
One of my uncles used to chew his food like 50 times before he swallowed it. We always used to make fun of him as a kid, but he probably was doing the right thing, wasn't he?
Absolutely. Our ancestors chewed for 3 to 4 hours a day. And if you think about us today, everything we're eating is soft. We don't chew at all. And that's another main reason why our breathing is so bad, because when we're not chewing, we're not exercising our airways, our tongues. So it becomes flabby just like anything else.
Let's get a quick call with Mayette in New York. Go ahead, Mayette.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. Fascinating, intriguing program. A quick three-parter, and you can answer after the break. First of all, I understand that these nasal watches that you see on TV or what have you can be dangerous. Secondly, want to know about breatharians. So a few years ago, in India, a man was documented as a breatharian, hadn't eaten in a long time, and didn't need to evacuate his bowels. The third part is trauma. So Tom was mentioning about the smoker. We know that veterans in particular, really need those cigarettes in terms of the trauma. So if you looked at any studies or help people with trauma and who at least want to pull back from the cigarettes. But, tobacco also was a Native American sacrament, and some herbals have tobacco in there for the heating effect.
And what was your first question? Nasal what, Maya?
These nasal washes.
Those little things you put in your nostrils. Okay, I've seen that. We're going to come back in a moment. I've got these questions all written down for you, James, and we'll get you to answer them and take final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll talk about the sleeping prophet Edgar Cayce with Joanne DiMaggio, so I'm looking forward to that, and we'll come back and take final calls with James Nestor. I've got my ads, three questions. We'll knock those off, too, and get to the rest of your calls. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, James Nestor, our special guest. James Mayette from New York left us three questions for you, which I have skillfully written down. Number one, these little nasal pots that you put in your nostrils, what are they? Do they work?
Yeah, these are neti pots, and this, again, was taken from yogis. This is how they clean out their nasal passages. And you might think, well, you know, our ancient ancestors didn't need these things. Why do we need them? Well, we live in a different environment with a lot of pollution and allergens and dust and mold and all that. And they work great. I used one, especially when I was flying a lot. The moment I would get off of an airplane, just being trapped in that cabin, exposed to everything, I would do this neti pot, and I think that that helped me to not get as sick, you know, especially on international flights.
And you use distilled water, don't you?
Yes, very important. Do not use tap water. You have to use distilled or very well-filtered, purified water.
Now, this is weird, but when you put the tip of the neti pot into your nostril and start dumping water, it comes out the other side, right?
Yeah, the first few times you're going to do this, you are going to absolutely hate it. You're going to be choking on water. You're going to say, this is the stupidest thing I've ever done. But, you know, just like most things in life, it gets easier the more that you do it. And it comes out the other side in a very...
And let me rephrase that. The other side of your nostril.
The other side. Wouldn't that be something if it came out the other side?
Oh, you know what? But no, anyway, we wouldn't want that.
This is G-rated. It's... If you put it in your right side of your nostril, all of this water is going to come out your left side. And you do that back and forth a few times to really get all that gunk out of your nose.
Now, she wants to know about breatharians. What about them?
Yeah, I did a pretty deep dive into breatharians. And just to explain to the listeners here, these are people who claim to subsist entirely on breath. No food, no water, no nothing. And, you know, repeatedly people have offered to run clinical studies, to run lab experiments of these people, and I have not seen one. So the people who are claiming to do this, I'm not saying that, you know, they can't do it. Evidence of absence is not absence of evidence or whatever that saying is. But I have never seen this conducted in a truly scientific way. And until that happens, I just can't believe it, just like I wouldn't believe something else.
What about smokers now and the way they breathe?
Well, yeah, she said a few things in regards to trauma and PTSD and smoking. That's a hard one to unpack. You know, smoking is an addiction from nicotine. If you're talking about trauma and PTSD, we know that breathing therapies, breathing techniques can have a tremendous impact on both of those things. And Dr. Justin Feinstein has worked on this for years and years, and he found that meditation, asking someone with PTSD who just came back from a war to sit in a room and stare at Buddha, is just not conducive to modern day living. But breathing is, because we take our breathing around with us everywhere we go, and we can focus on that and really benefit from it.
West of the Rockies, Ed's with us in Sierra Madre, California. Edward, go ahead.
Yes, hi, George and James.
Hi, Ed.
For taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'd like to mention a technique that I've learned by reading about yoga and pranayama and things you've mentioned. It would not be a daily practice for walking around and such, but it's a meditative thing that I do just before going to sleep, laying on my back. While measuring my blood pressure and doing something called bellows breathing from yoga practice. And it's long inhales and even longer extended exhales. Inhale through the nose and exhale through the mouth against a little bit of back pressure from... pursed lips, and it has an amazing effect on lowering blood pressure. And I have a device which is a commercial device, self-contained, no wires, runs on batteries. It's an upper arm cuff, which has been checked and pretty accurate in measuring blood pressure. But my first measurements breathing this way, you know, we'll start out at about 125, which is not too bad, but even that is considered elevated these days by the World Health Organization and the American Heart Association, and it's quite dramatic, the reduction in blood pressure you can achieve, which is sort of consistent with the stories about yogis who can control their heart rate and blood pressure by their own meditation skills. So I was wondering if you would comment on that, James, and have you ever heard of anything in that line? Am I fooling myself with this?
Absolutely. No, you're not. I can see my blood pressure drop by 10 or 15 points through some simple breathing techniques doing exactly what you're talking about.
And stay at that level, too, right?
And it can stay there as long as you're focusing on your breathing. The trick is to create that slower breathing as a habit, right? That can take a long time. But you can see these sudden changes in blood pressure. And there is some science, not a ton of it, showing that breathing even 10 minutes a day can have effect on blood pressure, and which makes perfect sense because what you're doing is you're allowing your nervous system to calm down. That's what's controlling your heart rate. Right now, if you place your hand over your heart and take an inhale to a count of about 4 or 5, whatever's comfortable, and then exhale longer to about 6 or 7 or 8, you're going to notice every time you inhale, your heart rate speeds up. Every time you exhale, it slows down because inhalations are associated with a stimulating response. That's why your heart rate is speeding up. Exhalations have the opposite response. It relaxes you. So if you're exhaling more than you're inhaling, you are relaxing your body. And a great method to use before going to bed that I use all the time is to inhale to 4, hold for 7, and exhale for 8. So 3/4 of the time, you're either holding your breath or exhaling. Guess what's going to happen to your nervous system? You're going to downregulate it, and you're going to calm yourself very, very quickly.
Have you ever had a bad situation with this breathing?
Yeah, a few of them. I got pretty deep into some of the breathing techniques that can really profoundly alter consciousness.
Really?
This is called holotropic breathing. Oh, yeah. You can essentially cut off about 40% of the blood supply to the brain by breathing, by hyperventilating.
Now, that's not good, is it?
It depends on what you're looking for. You know, a lot of people have psychological blocks. A lot of people have trauma, and this is a pressure release valve that can allow them to break through it. I talked to one psychiatrist who used this with 11,000 patients in a hospital over a decade, and they showed tremendous change, tremendous benefits from it. This is all documented, right? This is real science stuff. The thing is, some people will have some adverse effects to it, because when you deny your brain all of that needed circulation, you deny different areas of the brain the energy they need to operate properly, which is why you start hallucinating, or which is why you start having, they call it a rebirthing experience. And these experiences can get pretty wild, and it's not a placebo effect. You are altering the physiology of your body, and by that, you are altering your consciousness.
Let's go to Barry, Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hello there, Barry.
What do you say, old buddy, old pal? I tell you what, George, I'm sitting here about to die laughing about y'all talking about that flush.
The little neti pot. That's right.
Oh, boy. You better be careful where you put that tube.
Yep.
Anyway, fascinating subject, George. About 35 years ago, when I was in between marriages, I dated a respiratory therapist. She took care of my granddaddy while I lived with him for the last 2 years, and she taught him how to sit up totally erect, take a long, deep breath, hold it, and slowly breathe out. And my granddaddy swore, George, that he lived an extra 6 or 8 months just because of being able to breathe better.
What does it do for longevity?
Well, we know that one of the most accurate markers of longevity is lung size and respiratory health. So we've known this for more than 40 years. And if you think about it, we breathe from 20,000 to 25,000 times a day. If you are doing that improperly, it's going to wear your body down.
Absolutely.
Just imagine walking around with a sprain on your ankle for 10,000 steps. How are you going to feel after that? So it seems so ridiculous that we have to relearn how to breathe, because we're born breathers, right? I'm alive right now. I'm breathing. But again, compensation is different than health. A lot of us need to relearn how to eat properly because we've been eating the wrong foods for a long time. So we get most of our energy from our breath. And the fact that this caller's grandfather or father lived longer makes perfect sense because he's allowing his body to heal itself. If we don't allow our bodies to heal themselves throughout the day, every day, they're going to break down.
Here's a silly question, but it's kind of neat. Why do we have to breathe to stay alive? What does breathing do?
Breathing gives us oxygen, and oxygen gives us energy in the form of ATP. So we use glucose and oxygen to create energy, all of this energy that fuels our cells. We can also use ketones, if you've heard of the ketogenic diet, and oxygen. So we can only burn fat, I should also note, with oxygen, with the presence of oxygen. And when you are over-breathing and you are denying your body circulation, it has to flip into something called anaerobic respiration, where it is using just glucose. And that causes, after a while, causes all kinds of problems. So you want to be breathing easy. It should be imperceptible. This should not be something you're forcing yourself to do. It should be very easy and soft. And this is how your body wants to breathe to perform at its peak level.
Why do you die so quickly if you don't breathe after a couple minutes?
Because your brain doesn't get oxygen. Because every moment of every day of your life, oxygen is floating around in red blood cells and delivering those oxygen molecules to the other hungry cells in our body. So without oxygen, we're toast. And everyone knows this. You know, if it's a few minutes, you're done. You're unconscious, you're done. So if you think about oxygen that way, you think about breathing, of course you want to do this in the most efficient way. Of course you want to get the best possible habits to get energy most easily. You don't want to struggle to do anything, especially breathing.
Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, James. You know, you look at some world-class marathon runners trained in Mexico at the elevations of 13,000 feet. What were they trying to do with that? And my second question would be, you look in some that go underwater and just breathe through a reed. And I would wonder if there's herbs you would recommend that would be good for breathing.
So for altitude, we know there's been various studies. We know that this slower breathing is so much more beneficial.
Oh, absolutely. Sports teams are at a disadvantage when they go to visit like in Denver, for example.
Well, sure, but guess what happens when we go to elevation? We start breathing, right? We start breathing very quickly because there's less pressure.
And through your mouth.
You start breathing through your mouth. Guess what happens when you're doing that, though? You're not getting more oxygen. You're making it harder for your body to get oxygen because that need to breathe isn't dictated by oxygen. Right now, if you exhale and hold your breath and feel that need to breathe, that's dictated by rising levels of carbon dioxide, not oxygen. So if you're breathing slowly, they've found that blood sats, which can decrease at altitude down to 80 or even into the 70s, you can increase those to, 10 points, 10 or 15 points just by switching the way in which you breathe, by breathing in line with your metabolic needs. So the other question was about, he was talking about runners in Mexico City. I have one story about that. That same vocal coach that I was telling you about earlier, who helped those emphysemics and those singers, he was hired by the U.S. Men's Olympic track team in 1968 to train the runners to compete in Mexico City, which is at an elevation of about 6,000 feet. They were the only team not to take oxygen before or after the race. And they won more gold, more medals than anyone else. They destroyed everybody. And they claimed they were able to do this because they knew how to breathe properly.
Interesting. Now, Frank Sinatra used to breathe these long notes, but he would be able to slit his mouth. And he'd be able to, while he was singing, he could breathe in through his mouth. Probably not the greatest thing to do, but it helped his singing.
Circular breathing. Any saxophone player, any woodwind player, any wind trumpet, that's what they're doing. And he was also, what he would do is he'd go into a pool and hold his breath and swim back and forth. So this would allow him to retain his lung capacity, which declines as we get older. Once we're 30, once we get to be about 35, our lung capacity starts shrinking, but we can reverse that with proper breathing. And Frank was into it, and all the yogis have been into this for thousands of years.
James, stay in touch with us. Let's not let 11 years go by this time. We'll be back in a moment talking about the life of the prophet Edgar Cayce on Coast to Coast AM.